Let's dig up the actual jury question in Castile and take a look. The question is too long to get all 13 on one slide. So here are the first several, and you will immediately notice that A, B, C, and D have roots in the DTPA requiring consumer status. The opinion treats those as theories, as separate apples in the barrel. If you go to the end of the question, these are just 2121 insurance code statutory provisions that don't require consumer status, but we don't know what the jury thought. We don't know which one was persuasive enough to get the yes. And so it has to be reversed. The argument in the day was, hey, broad form submission, I think Luke Soles used to say it was designed to mask error and therefore let it slide. And the court said, we're not going to let it slide that much. That goes too far. There's a legal error, and here's the rule. So is it harmless to include the flawed theories? No, at least not presumptively. That is to say, here's the rule of presumed harm. If you have it preserved and you've commingled theories, voila, the rule of presumed harm. I got that right, panelists?
So far, you're right.
And no real controversy, right? Was that a fairly easy case, Tom?
It was a unanimous opinion. It was a change in the EB case from 10 years earlier, which he said, we'll put up with a lot of error to have broad form submissions. So I'd say it was controversial in that regard. But as to this particular case, when you lead off with your first four questions, or just the first four subparts, are just something that couldn't apply in this case, people thought it was error. Whether or not you go all the way back to Lancaster, which is a case there was a rule on harmful error, but people weren't following it as much as they did on the harmless error rule after the 1941 rules. Because the Supreme Court rules prior to then really didn't displace much.
Right.
There were statutes that governed most procedure. So it was a little bit controversial, but it was an easier case. And we will see that sometimes easy rules get hard.
And I'll just riff on what you said. Suppose only, and won't even ask the panel unless you want to comment, suppose only one of the 13 apples had been rotten, one DTPA, and 12 very good solid apples, just the one, would it matter? Okay, hold that thought. Let's move on to the follow-on, because Castile is about a legal error. Harris County, as you know, is about a factual problem. Here's one of the questions that had difficulty. One of the elements, which we've marked in red for you, element B in this particular question, turns out was not supported by the evidence. And so it looks like sort of an extension of Castile, that instead of the problem being law-based, it's now fact-based. And I will confess, I filed a friend of the court brief just as a practitioner, had no cases involved, but that said, hey, wait a minute. You know, I just read this Scalia opinion, and in Griffin, the United States Supreme Court said, well, we know from all of this history of criminal law, if you have a multi-count indictment and just a general verdict of guilty, I'm not worried if the jury gets it wrong on facts, as long as there's evidence to support a conviction on one of the counts. I'm a lot more worried if there's a mistake of law. But if it's just facts, that's no problem. We'll leave that to the jury. I got three votes for that. Got a minority for that position.
Infinitely better than the Castile dissent.
and audience, remember Griffin. We're gonna circle back to that when we get to federal. So Harris County tells us, yes, Castile extends to these theories that are legally correct, but factually not correct. So that takes us into a new world. And I don't know if anyone realized how new a world that was.
Maybe some did, but maybe the author of Harris County didn't. The Supreme
Court.
Could
you have written it better yourself?
Surely not. Okay. Anyway, as we heard about Justice Ginsburg, we don't go back and cry over spilt milk. But the idea that damages should be separated, damages, not not mm-hmm. other things, not other fact questions, was pretty well established. It was already in the PJC by then. Kavanaugh versus Quality Parking in the mid-1980s had taken away prejudgment interest because John O'Quinn, as the plaintiff, didn't separate past damages from future, and people were already mainly separating their damages. And you've got to remember, the Supreme Court always thinks of no evidence as a law question. Every bit as much right. a law question as you're applying the wrong statute. That's just the mindset of the justices. Mm-hmm. We can't stay away from factual insufficiency. When you get to no evidence, that's right in our bailiwick.
Fair enough.
So there again, we didn't see this as...
Right.
It had a dissent. It was closer. Obviously, somebody read your letter, but we didn't see it perhaps for the groundbreaking nature, or I didn't, that it may have become.
And I do think it's interesting when you look back with the perspective of 20 years of history. It's easy to see how Harris County seemed like a very short step from Castile. We could anticipate that that issue was likely to arise quickly. It didn't seem like a particularly difficult step for the court to take, and I can see why the court wouldn't find it difficult. But in retrospect, it is the moment of crossing the Rubicon, right? When you open the doctrine of presumed harm to evidentiary insufficiency,